Welcome, everybody. My name is Kent Seaton, co-founder of Athletes Touch with Justin Blaine. Welcome to the Tower of Power podcast that we've got coming at you right now. We're an exclusive community helping former pro and college athletes in the business world get ready to rocket fuel your ship, professionally speaking. I'm here. Justin, go ahead and take it away.
If you like great stories, sports, and success, you're in the right place. Buckle up and join us for a great ride.
Have you wondered what the future of restaurants look like post-COVID? Tune in now as Jen Henriksen, VP of Development for Kitchen United, which just raised more than $40 million to fuel the future of restaurants, shares her story on where she thinks the restaurant industry is headed.
All right, without further ado, I'm going to get us into Jen Henriksen and her multifaceted background. Jen, you've been a member of Athletes Touch for what, parts of 3, 4, 5 years now?
Geez, yeah, I can't remember when I met you, well, all you hooligans. Yeah. But yeah, it's probably been 4 or 5 years.
So Jen, I think, is the only Canadian on the call. So why don't we start there? Take us from the top. I want to go back before Kitchen United. We can talk a lot about that as well, but kind of take us through your background, your overview, how you grew up, how you got here, all that good stuff.
Sure. Well, it started in Canada. I am American by birth. My folks moved to Canada when I was 5. And so super north British Columbia, middle of nowhere, really solid upbringing. Stayed up there for school, college in Alberta, played volleyball, and ended up in Calgary ultimately after school. And my volleyball career continued on the sort of like national competitive stage. First of all, my education is in business, majored in marketing and public relations, got into account management with AT&T in Calgary and started gaining some international business experience, mostly into the US, but a little bit overseas as far as building networks for primarily large global oil and gas companies. That was a big segment of the space, lots of software and tech companies as well. Spent about 5 years in Calgary and then early 2000s, made my way to California. Kind of lived all over the place. So a lot of you kind of around SoCal. I first was in Orange County, Yorba Linda, did some contract work with some ad agencies and just trying to get my footing in a new country, in a new state. And lived in Long Beach for a bit and ultimately found my way to Hermosa Beach, which is where I live now. Worked through primarily tech companies for the last 15, 17 years. So leading sales and marketing organizations, building out those teams, as well as building partner channels and doing channel development to drive growth for pretty much mid-market size companies. So I would say anywhere from 80 to 120 million in annual revenues type size space. And ended up with a logistics company, one of the biggest in the world, Vanguard Logistics Services. And they brought me in to build their sales organization structure out globally, as well as launch a new website and brand for the company. They had been through a bunch of M&A activity. They had, you know, 20 different logos and faces to the world. So I was brought in to do that. And going from technology to logistics was a bit like stepping back in time to the 70s on the tech front, but it was really incredible experience and really was a big part in setting the foundation for where I am today, which is at Kitchen United is a mix of everything from tech to, you know, B2C, B2B, logistics, manufacturing, really complex sort of structure and work environment. So it's a lot of fun. That's kind of where we are now.
So like I was checking out your distinguished resume and it looks like you spent 2, 3, 4 years at a handful of stops. Talk about maybe some of the good, the bad, any experiences that particularly shaped you since you've kind of been in this really accelerating a development set of roles?
You know, I would say the big ones. I don't really love the, you know, 3, 4 year runs. And I think that I'm Gen X. This is just kind of part of the time. I think that anything in business, probably back to, well, I guess, you know, early 2000s, companies really sort of shifted from come work here, work your way up, stay with us, build your retirement and retire. It's become a very sort of contract type based work culture. And I think a lot of that is driven through investment industry. And so I found myself in, and it took me a few different roles to figure this out. I think I ended up with companies that had different types of investment backing. Typically, those investors have term limits on those investments. And it just wasn't, you know, before Vanguard Logistics, the tech companies loved it. That really was my wheelhouse in a space I loved, was being in sort of that size company that has a little bit of foundation established. They have some established customer base, they have a little brand awareness, and you can sort of build on those things versus starting from scratch. So really kind of enhancing an operation was where I really enjoyed spending my time. The challenge was you can invest all this time and energy, and being a, maybe part of it being an athlete, that I am very loyal. And so you sort of, you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into those organizations and what you're creating. And then to have them really, regardless of what you do, the payoff for you is in the valuation where it ends. And if you're not a stakeholder with a significant amount of shares in that company, because as they continue to raise, that value continues to be diluted and your ownership of it continues to be diluted, depending on the structure. It's sort of like a kind of anticlimactic. And when I was coming into Kitchen United, it was interesting because I had been consulting for a couple of years. And what I loved about consulting was that I could create strategies for companies, suggest to them, recommend to them what they should be doing, but I wasn't attached to the result. So it was take it or leave it. I'm not going to take it personally if you don't like this plan. If you want help with this plan, I can do that with you. But what I found I couldn't really deal with, or what I was missing was more important, which was that teamwork. So being on the outside, I wasn't on the inside being part of a team and building those relationships and actually sort of conquering something together, some big problem. So when the opportunity came up with Kitchen United, it was one of the first questions I had for them. When I came in, I said, I don't want to do this VC thing again. I don't want to do this. I don't want to come in. I might as well keep my own consulting thing. I don't want to come in and do this. They said, no, this is different. This is long haul. This is a company that we want to be around in 20 years and want you to be able to go wherever you want to go and wherever this takes you. And so that was probably the biggest differentiator in that experience and why I'm very happy where I am today.
So as you transition there, talk about, you said relationship building, and I know that meant primarily with teammates. Talk about it on the external, where people have helped you get to opportunities like Kitchen United. Talk about how you got there and kind of the relationship building or networking, whatever you want to call it, connecting along the way that probably led to that opportunity.
Oh, it's so fascinating, because this opportunity actually goes back to when I first moved to California. So it would have been 2002, 2003. And the other interesting thing, I touched on the experience I gained over that, between 2003 and 2018, through those years, the experience I gained across technology, manufacturing, logistics for different companies, that throughout that journey, you don't necessarily understand what those connections are going to lead to or what they're going to evolve to be. This particular company and opportunity, I've worked with this CEO before. And there are times over the last 15 years where I wished I was working for him in other capacities at other companies and in other functions. And this is one where we just all had to take our own journey. And what's fascinating is that he left the last company that we were at together, and he did the same thing. He said, I'm not doing this VC thing again. I'm going to go open a restaurant. It's going to be my thing. And that's it. And he did that. And he spent 5-6 years running his own restaurant with his family. And it's amazing. He gets a phone call maybe 2.5 years ago. And it's a recruiter who we all know very well. And he says, hey, I've got this opportunity that you'd be perfect for. They're looking for a CEO. They're looking for their first round. I think this is right before our A series. And he says, nope, not doing VC again. And they said, no, you should come in and take a look at this one. And it turns out that's where we are now. And he ended up now having all of this restaurant experience that he could then come in and leverage that and that operational experience along with his tech background and understanding of the whole industry. And once they closed their A series, they started, you know, they needed some help building out, you know, what does this look like? In the earlier days, they did a lot, they tried a lot of different models. And so when I came on board late 2018, we really spent last year learning, iterating, figuring out what works, what doesn't, and sort of building that experience together as a broader team. And it was, it's funny because all of these twists and turns, you know, the logistics role that I ended up with was just sort of, I went to a women's networking thing one night and I met somebody that was with a consulting firm, and that person had a colleague in Orange County that called them like 2 weeks later and said, "Hey, I'm looking for someone that can do this." And the person I had just met said, "Oh, you have to talk to Jen." And if I hadn't had that time in logistics, which is just such a complex space, you know, would I have been able to grasp the concept of what I'm doing today and what my company does today? So it's really funny how it all comes around full circle.
So for those who don't know, talk about the Kitchen United model, kind of from the, as if you're talking to a 5-year-old, help us understand exactly what it is.
Sure. Probably the easiest way to frame it, there's a concept out there called ghost kitchens, which we sound a little spooky to us, but nobody's really figured out what to call us. So it works. We find buildings in super dense urban markets. We retrofit those buildings with anywhere from 8 to 14 fully equipped commercial kitchens. We configure those kitchens in the back in a way that is optimized to get food to the consumer as quickly as possible. And we put a small retail footprint at the front of house where consumers, delivery drivers can come in, pick up their orders, and take it away. We have a technology platform that allows consumers to order across all of the concepts in one building on one credit card transaction. In some locations, depending on city permitting and what the city's up for, we'll have limited amount of seating in that front of house. So you could come in and get your food and you could sit and enjoy it. We also, on the tech side, we do a ton of marketing to help the restaurants be successful. We fill the buildings with a mix of large national chains, regional concepts, and another third, roughly a third, hot local concepts in each market. And we're very data driven. So the data side of it is figuring out, you know, where is the highest demand in a specific market, and then what cuisines are in highest demand in that market, and then what brands are in highest demand, so that we can help the restaurants make sure that they're as successful as possible in their facility. The restaurant member comes in and they pay a monthly membership fee that's all inclusive. So the equipment is included in the kitchen, utilities. We don't cook and we don't drive. So they run their business as they always would out of their existing brick and mortar locations. They maintain whatever food supply chain they want. They can use whatever tech platforms they want, Uber Eats, Grubhub, et cetera. We will help them get those things set up and established. We'll receive their food supply and put it away. And then we have shared labor across the building that runs food, keeps the facility clean. And that membership fee covers all of that overhead. And so we don't take percent of sales. There's no structure that way. And we typically work with known and established restaurant brands.
Welcome to the intermission. Kit, who's this group for? Is it for Super Bowl champs?
Check.
How about cross-country skiers?
Check.
How about Olympic synchronized swimmers?
Triple check.
So it sounds like anybody who has an athlete's mindset or mentality could qualify here.
Quadruple check, Justin. This group is a rocket-fuel-powered community for former athletes to use their state of mind to succeed in the sport of business.
So would it be safe to say it's a little bit like a WeWork model for restaurateurs and that type of concept? Because you're kind of subleasing in a sense, but through membership?
Similar, but I would say that digging deeper, we go really deep into the operation. We understand restaurants. It's a lot to manage the logistics of a facility. You can imagine if you have 12 restaurants in a space and you're thinking that each restaurant has 2 or 3 food suppliers, and those food suppliers are arriving 2 to 3 days per week per restaurant. there are so many moving parts and pieces, and then to get into the, you know, health permitting and all of these other bits. So I would say yes, similar as far as a financial model potentially, or like how that membership fee works. But we do, the restaurants come in for typically 1 year contracts, potentially longer. They do auto renews longer terms. So we do 10 year leases underlying.
And this may seem overly simplistic, but it's almost like you prepared your business for a coronavirus situation. At least talk about, I mean, I can't imagine it could have worked any better for you guys as far as what's gone on, maybe visibility, maybe receptivity from restaurants who've had to shift to takeout and delivery focused, as opposed to before when they may have scoffed at it to some degree. What has this been like, this period been like for you guys?
Really hectic. Our facilities, we have three facilities open today, Pasadena, Scottsdale, Chicago, and we are opening in the next few weeks in Austin, Texas. The first, as like the rest of the restaurant industry, I would say that the first week to 2 weeks, we saw a slight dip in volume. Consumers were staying home, they bought a bunch of groceries, and they just went into lockdown, and nobody left their house. I would say the first week of April probably is when consumers started, okay, I'm going to be here for a while, so I'm going to get comfortable with getting takeout. The difficult thing has been seeing what's been happening to the industry. I mean, it's devastating. And every week I'm talking to people who are displaced. I'm talking to people who, and it's not just the restaurants. This is affecting distributors. It is affecting manufacturing. It is affecting real estate, very far reaching implications to what's happening right now to the economy overall. You know, we're weathering this quite well. We don't have the same pickup volume that we used to have. So people coming into the kitchen center to place their order and take it away, but that will come back. At the same time, the delivery piece is up quite a bit. We don't have any room in our facilities other than Austin. And so restaurants pivoting immediately is challenging if they wanted to come in. We've been focusing our effort on trying to help as many restaurants as possible stay in business. And since our focus has been, look, we understand takeout and delivery. We understand how these platforms work. We know the players in the market. We know how to package your product to get it to the consumer. We know how to drive volume that way. So we've been running weekly webinars for anybody that wants to attend, where they can learn, you know, here's how I make my dine-in establishment optimized for takeout and delivery so that I can continue serving these consumers. And almost immediately, there were a number of very large brands that just closed for the duration. And I the last 2 weeks have been so nuts. I haven't seen all the numbers, but last I read, somewhere around 40% of dining rooms were closed. Dine-in has been hit really hard. Fast casual is doing a little bit better. Any restaurant brands that were already somewhat structured to do takeout and delivery are having a bit more success right now, I think, than others. And we're trying to teach where we can.
What is, from your vantage point, you're heading up kind of development in all the key markets or all these new markets, is that right?
It's really a mix. So yes, my role is in corporate development. I work with a very small team of me and one other that really builds corporate partnerships that'll help us achieve our business objectives. That can be, you know, we work with everything from food manufacturing, big companies that want to do some testing, to real estate, to tech solutions. We're always matching solutions with the restaurant members in our facilities. If there's something that our restaurant members need or something that would help their operation do better, we have those relationships and we'll make those connections.
So you launch in Austin, then you're new to the scene. Maybe they haven't heard about you. What's the selling points? What are some of the features that you talk to the restaurant community about? How do you maybe convince them to have an ancillary kitchen or shift or expand, or what's going on those talking points?
So for different types of restaurants, the reason for coming into our facility varies. We have some brands in our facilities that are very large chains that have too much confusion happening at their brick and mortar. It's a pretty disconnected and complex experience for a consumer to come into a dining establishment and get their pickup. So we're a solution for brands that want to outsource that, move that off premise, get the takeout business out of the way. It is its own revenue stream and they understand and see that there's a high cost of doing business in their dine-in establishment across the labor pool and everything else to have that confusion. Another way that people leverage our facilities is to expand into new market. You know, it might be someone in California that says, I want to go expand into Texas. So I'm going to open in Austin. They can do that with us at a much lower price than building their own brick and mortar. We carry all the CapEx. Typically, they can be up and running in one of our facilities within, you know, weeks versus what would take anywhere from 12 to 18 months to build their own brick and mortar, plus establish their branding, plus do all that hiring. So they might look at a, you know, a $2 million investment to go do that on their own, whereas they can come in with us and, you know, for sub 100, they can come in and operate for months and get the brand out to the marketplace. And then typically they'll follow that up with coming to do a build of their own in that area. So sort of like a hub and spoke approach.
So it's kind of like R&D almost for them if they want to test out.
Absolutely.
And what did you say, maybe you mentioned this before, what's typical capacity? And maybe it varies by size, but what do you normally shoot for as far as number of concepts within one of the buildings?
Yeah, so we can work with anything. Typically, at the beginning, we started building these a little large. The kitchens, our first two properties, Pasadena was our very first. So we do a ton of testing in Pasadena, and we're very attached to that market. Chicago River North was our second. And both of those buildings, we acquired former Cordon Bleu cooking schools. And so the kitchens have very large footprints. They're a little bit more open. That's sort of how the industry started. And we discovered that we only need a fraction of that footprint in a kitchen. The more steps a cook has to take, the more it slows down efficiencies. You can't put out as much product, and potentially there's food degradation if it's taking too long to get from the kitchen out to the front of house. So we found we could make these much more compact. Austin and Scottsdale were built ground up, and we've even gotten more compact on those kitchen sizes.
Last question. How do you do, you mentioned pricing, I think you said sub 100, so that would lead me to believe that some memberships may be, what, 8 to 10,000 a month, depending? Is that about right? How do you?
Well, it depends on location. Yeah. Sorry, finish your question.
How do you do pricing with the different size kind of restaurant groups? I'd imagine it's very different, but depending on budgets.
It's all based on the building. So an ideal number of concepts in a space, you know, you want enough variety for the marketplace. So 5 or 6 concepts is probably the smallest number that we would put into a facility. Anywhere from 8 to 12 is probably the sweet spot. There's so many variables around how much of a real estate footprint can we get in a specific location that we want to get into. If you look at cities like Manhattan or some parts of Chicago, super dense areas, Miami, where you might have to get more creative with, and you might have a smaller footprint. So building out those smaller kitchens is critical. The underlying cost, it's really the cost of the lease is what's covered. We build in 2 kitchen sizes, a standard and a deluxe. And it's really the same rate for everybody. Each contract is negotiated through a sales process as through any sales process goes. And you, of course, always have different outliers or ways to get through that process. But typically, it's really just based on the cost of us to operate that facility and the underlying lease.
So actually, I'll ask you another question then on that. You're expanding to Austin. Where are some of the next markets? And what do you look for in a target market?
So we are... with the 4 markets that we have a great mix of some dense urban and then some more kind of suburban neighborhoods, which gives us a really good balance. And we also have a couple different kitchen sizes, different models. So we've got a good baseline. We've really optimized and figured out how to build quickly and efficiently. We've got really solid relationships across the restaurant ethos. And so the restaurants know us. They've been learning about us for a long time. And we have a waiting list typically to get into facilities that we're talking about now. So that's kind of the place that we've gotten across the restaurant industry. On the real estate side, real estate is expected to do well in some areas coming out of COVID. Couple others struggling. If you look at like the industrial warehouse 3PL type structure, is in very high demand right now with companies like Amazon, Walmart, Target, right? These are the big box companies, and other areas I think that will be a bit distressed on the retail side. Those are sort of the footprints that we might be interested in. We look for areas that are anywhere from 2x to 9x or higher the average delivery density demand. So upcoming markets, we are all about the denser the better. So Manhattan, San Francisco, Bay Area, Los Angeles, we'd like to get downtown and west side. We're looking in Miami, DC, Boston, and then if we could pick something up, sort of Seattle, Denver, Houston, Dallas, we would consider all those as well.
Thank you, Jen. That was awesome. Give Jen a nice.
Thanks, everybody. It's really good to see all your faces.
Good to see you too.
Another great story in the books. Who's inspired with me? Kent, where do people go from here?
God, Justin, I'm so glad you asked me that question. Everybody today, we're so excited to have you on this show. If you're interested in our Rocket Fuel Accelerator, if you'd like to join membership at Athletes Touch, go to our awesome website at www.athletestouch.co, and we'll see you soon. If you want to look us up on our social handles, LinkedIn and Twitter, Athletes Touch, at Athletes Touch. Thanks, guys.